Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here this Sunday morning with us on our weekly Sunrise Project call. I am so happy you're all here and always delighted to be here in a safe space filled with love and compassion and our mutual desire to heal ourselves and our families. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the willingness to know the difference, the wisdom to know the difference, I should say. I am so happy to have a wonderful, incredible woman with us this morning. Actually, my namesake, we spell the name, our name's the same, Kelly. Her name is Kelly Ware. And Kelly, we're in for a treat this morning, let me just say that. But Kelly Ware is a mother, a certified life and relationship coach, an author, speaker, and a veteran of the United States Navy, which I'm just in awe of. Driven by her passion to provoke those who have yet to tap into their inherent superpower, which is found in authenticity, she has been commissioned by God to help people, especially women, come to recognize their strength and significance by breaking free from the bondage of limiting beliefs and the trauma of their past. It is Kelly's core belief that every human being has been given a specific set of gifts, talents, and abilities that, coupled with their experience, exposure, and education, make their existence on Earth necessary right now. She is positioned and purposed to help people to identify and ignite their distinct set of capabilities and empower them to unearth and execute their God-given assignment. As a transformational speaker, Kelly uses her personal life lessons and the principles outlined in her books. And that is plural books. She has a recent one that we'll talk about in a moment, but in her many books, to inspire women to harness the power of every experience as a catalyst for living a purposeful and powerful life. As a life and relationship coach, she seamlessly fuses coaching and concentrated meditation therapy that has proven to be extremely effective in facilitating accelerated results. As I mentioned, Kelly is author of multiple books that have transformed the lives of her readers. Her most recent book is titled Unconventional Grief: Grieving the Loss of a Less Than Perfect Parent. And it is available now, and I will share the link in the chat a little bit later. Again, it's called Unconventional Grief: Grieving the Loss of a Less Than Perfect Parent. Currently, if that's not enough, she is pursuing her Doctor of Business Administration with a focus on executive coaching from Liberty University. She also holds a Master of Business Administration. She's a professional certificate in executive leadership, and on and on and on. She has many degrees and is still getting degrees, and she is incredible. She is completely committed to using every ounce of her education, expertise, and experience to facilitate the success of others. And Kelly shared with me this morning that her greatest joy is the gift of being a mother to her beautiful son, Mr. Christopher Lee Anthony II, who is about to be 21 years old on the 27th of this month. So welcome, Kelly. I'm so happy to have you with us this morning. Thank you for being here.
It is my distinct pleasure to be here with you and with your audience today. I look forward to this powerful discussion.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to start by having you share, your background, who you are. Like, who is Kelly Ware?
So I am somebody who has been through hell. I have danced with the devil, baby, and I have made it back. And I consider myself the picture of possibility because I do not look like what it is that I have been through. Hailing from the Washington, D.C. area, I went from living in a beautiful home in Fort Washington, Maryland, to finding myself in the middle of the hood right behind Berry Farms. Okay. And I have survived multiple attempts of taking my own life. Okay. Because life had just become so crazy. And I had to come to a resolve that since I couldn't find a way to die, I had to find the will to live. And y'all, I have found it. And I have taken that will and that power, right? And I am using it to empower others to find a reason and a purpose for their pain, which will ultimately enhance and empower their life. So.
I'm you see my mouth wide open in awe, and you said so much right there. I want to pause for a moment on some of the things that you said, because some of us have been close to people or know people who may have ended their life by suicide. And you, thankfully, as you just said, did not complete that, and on multiple times. What do you think? What was the impetus, and how old were you the first time when you tried to end your life?
So the first time I was 17 years old, it was Thanksgiving Day, 1997. And it was right after I had been, so my mother was pretty much losing our home. My mom was a drug addict, right? So she is the reason for my most recent book. She passed away in January of 2023.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And so from going from that, right, and for on the outside it looked good, on the inside of the home though it was pure hell. And so going from at least the comfort of luxury to going to such a crime-ridden neighborhood, I my world was crumbling, and I didn't know what to do, right? And from there, seeing someone lose their life as a teenager shapes you, and it changed immediately. And I thought that, okay, if I go from where I was and things were cascadingly crumbling, right? What, God, what are we doing? Like, there is what if this is all that this is going to be? I don't want to be here for this. And so, not understanding how to process and manage that level of pain, because it was sandwiched on top of the abuse that I was experiencing in the home. So there was so much that was happening at one time. And as a 17-year-old, I didn't know what to do. And so that was my only way of escaping. But it didn't work. And that's one failure that I am proud
Yeah.
of.
Right, absolutely. We're all proud that you're here and sharing your gifts. And thank you for sharing that. And your story. And you mentioned your mother was a drug addict. Was she a drug addict your whole childhood?
Was a functional cocaine addict for all of my life. She actually dibbled and dabbled while she was pregnant with me. But then around age 15 years old, she became a dysfunctional crack addict, unfortunately, that she remained so until her last day on earth. So.
Did you I'm sorry, I'm feeling that, and I can feel your pain through your beautiful face even. I can still feel it.
Thank you.
How do you reconcile with your mother, especially since she passed away? And that's what a lot of your book is about, right? It's unconventional grief and grieving the loss of a less than perfect parent. Can you share more about that book, and what caused you to write the book? Why did you write it? And was just talk about the whole book process and what we can learn from that.
Awesome, thank you. So the I had no intention of writing that book. In fact, I have two other manuscripts that I am working on that are totally unrelated. And so growing up with a mother who what I have learned has had mental health challenges. And if you know anything about being in a black home back in the 80s, some stuff you just didn't talk about,
That's
right?
right.
So I was not aware that that was even a concept, right? That was even a thing. So with my mom being on drugs, the emotional and physical abuse that I suffered from her, a lot of people didn't know what's happening, right? And you said something very key. You said, "I can feel your pain even through your smiling face." And that was my life's existence. My mother was very much a perfectionist. I was like always dressed to the nines, not a hair out of place, right? My mom was also a hairdresser, not a hair out of place. And we always looked good when we walked out of that door, right? But behind closed doors, behind the smiles, was tumult. It was so much pain that I was living. And I lived a dual life because my father was so loving towards me. He spoiled me. You know, I got the beauty of experiencing a parent-child relationship the way it was meant to be with my father. But he was in the army, so he was often gone away on TDY fighting for our country. And I was left at home with my mother, who I am her splitting image. I look exactly like her. But the reason why I live today is because my father said, "I will come back to you as long as you save my baby. Like, don't abort my baby," right? So I was a picture of a lot of pain for my mother, and I ended up receiving the brunt end of that pain. So the book came out
Can I
of,
ask you a question about that before you go on about the book? So you're saying your father held you sort of as a carrot to say, I will, as long as you take care of her, I'll come back to you. So it wasn't like, I love you and I'm coming back to you. I'm coming back to you as mom, as my partner, only because of our daughter.
So they, of course, you know, people go through their stuff, right?
Absolutely.
And when my mom found out that I was pregnant, and this is what she has told me. I mean, she, the only reason why you're here is because you're that, right? That's what she has said to me on many occasions. My father loved my mother. He did. They were
Yes.
married for 20, over almost 30 years. He loved her. And even during her time of dysfunctional drug addiction, he wanted to help her. But my mother was adamant about breaking that thing off, right? And so when my father left, my mom tried to take my father's life.
Oh, wow.
And so he ran for his life,
Wow.
right? And he, when he left, it left me there, right? My oldest brother was incarcerated. My middle brother, who is older than me because I'm the youngest and the only girl, he was old enough to be out and gone. And he actually was living with my grandmother at the time. So it was just myself and my mother in the home. And so I was raised to always honor your mother and your father. This is what my dad would say to me. So the thought of defending myself against my mother was foreign to me. I was scared to do it because I was scared that God was going to be mad at me, but I didn't understand why is this happening? Like, you know, you understand what I'm saying? And so
Yes,
there
I
was a
do.
conundrum there, and I had finally reached a breaking point where it was either her or me. Okay. And so that's how I ended up, you know, a homeless teenager for a good little while. And then my best friend and her family allowed me to move in with them. And they again lived in Southeast DC. So I had
How old were you when you left home?
16. I was 16 years old when I left home. 16 when I left home, but I got a job working at Nordstrom, was in high school as a high school student, still graduated on time, still graduated on the honor roll, just barely, but on the honor roll. And
Amazing.
so all of this was happening at 16, 17, 18 years old. And so I had in my adult life come to grips with what happened to me. I had finally gotten to a place where I had gotten over the life that I thought I should have. Y'all, I had my life planned out. I was supposed to go to Spelman. I was supposed to play Delta Sigma Theta. Like, it was mapped out. I had it. The vision was there, right? But that didn't happen. And once I got over the fact that the life that I planned didn't happen, and I accepted my mother for who she chose to be. And that's key. Who she chose to be. It wasn't because of me. It wasn't because of anything else other than her decisions. I could no longer take on the blame for her being the way that she was. And once I had accepted all of that, I had finally gotten to a place where I could be in the same room with my mother and not feel anxiety and not feel the rage, bubble up in me and me having to suppress and push that down. I had finally gotten to that place. And I was like, okay, right? There's some hope here for her and I to have a healthy relationship. But she never got clean. And with her never becoming clean, that just was not a possibility. So when my mother passed away, the grief that I experienced was unexpected because I had come to terms with this is the life she chose to live, and that's the end result of the life, right? That at some point she's going to transition. And because we didn't have any real emotional connection, the day she passed away, okay, I was okay. This is it. I knew it was coming. All right. And I kept moving, right? I planned the whole funeral, picked out the outfit that she was going to wear, went to the funeral home, handled all the business, made sure that the funding was in place, da 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 da. I did all of the things, right? Hadn't shed a tear. If I did cry, it was because I saw the pain in my brothers, but not because I felt any sense of loss. And I thought I was good, y'all. I'm a life coach. I practice what I teach. So the principles were in place. I was exercising those things. And the day after my mother's funeral, I was paralyzed with grief. I woke up and physically could not move. And it felt like a train had hit me out of nowhere. I couldn't breathe. I had a panic attack. And y'all, this I wasn't ready. And I had such an amalgamation of emotion. Some of it was rage. I was so angry at her. This is not how I was supposed to experience life. Things that I thought I had already processed and gotten over, right? That wound was reopened. I felt a sense of vindication. It serves you right. You don't deserve to be here. I wanted to end my life because of you, and now you're gone. So good. Then it was the hope that I had to someday have a healthy relationship with my mom. When she died, that hope died with her. And so I felt alone, even though she was never really somebody that I felt close to. I still felt alone. I didn't understand why a part of me felt dead on the inside when I had no bond with this human, right? She was just, I looked at her as an egg carrier. Thank you for bringing me here, but that's about all the honor I got for you, right?
Well,
And
yes.
so, oh, go ahead.
I'm just going to mute. I heard somebody, I think they didn't realize they were talking. They were not on mute. No problem. Keep going.
Okay, but so that's kind of where I was the day after my mother's funeral, and I couldn't function. I couldn't process what I was feeling. And then I felt guilty for the negative thoughts that I had surrounding my mother's death. This is not who I am, the kind of person that would wish death on somebody, my mother, let alone. And I found myself, when I would share with people the judgment that I received for expressing how I really felt, I didn't want to live, y'all. I didn't want to live. And so I started writing the book because I felt like I know I'm not the only person that has experienced this in secret, who has suffered with this kind of grief in silence, because I don't miss my mother. Don't. And today, right? And I'm okay with saying that today. I don't miss her. We didn't have a healthy relationship when I was growing up. And as an adult, she wasn't really a part of my life, right? So I don't miss her. But there was still grief that I had to process that was completely outside of the norm. It defied convention. It was unconventional grief. And so I wrote the book to share my story about how I experienced that, but to also give people permission to grieve in their own way. There is no cookie cutter, picture perfect way to grieve. And there are emotions that will come up for you. And if your parent wasn't addicted to drugs, maybe they were addicted to alcohol. Maybe they were absent, right? As many single parent households as we have in this world today, You have a less than perfect parent if they were not there for you. And so, how do you grieve the loss of that person? I also wrote the book for people who are living with that less than perfect parent, right? You are grieving the loss of them, loss of the relationship with them, even while they are yet alive. And I did not realize that I had started grieving my mother's death when I was 15 years old. So th this book is for that person. And then the book is for the less than perfect parent that is living today. And maybe you don't even know that you're the less than perfect parent.
I think most of
Maybe.
us do. That's
Right? But some parents
why
live
we're
in denial.
here.
Some parents say, as long as I provided you with food and
Yeah,
food on the
true.
table, clothes on your back, and a roof over your head, I was a great parent to you.
That's
Not
true.
realizing, right? And not realizing that, yes, that's the bare minimum. That doesn't make you a perfect parent. And so it's a book that will hopefully that those parents will read and realize the error of their ways and then position themselves in humility to go back to their children to try to fix it if they because they can, right? At this point, you're still alive. There's still an opportunity for you to figure out how to mend the relationship with your children. And so the point of that book is to help those who are grieving and to help those who are living as that person. You still have an opportunity. You have a chance. Even if you don't have the traditional relationship, you still have the chance to have a positive impact in the lives of your children and to apologize and take accountability and make things. So that's why I wrote the
Oh, that is so good and so powerful because that part, like a possibility of recreating a space and a relationship that may be flawed or may have been flawed. I love that. And you're saying the book is not, it's for anybody that wants to recreate a relationship that may have been broken or damaged or less than optimal. I love
Yes.
that. You have gone through so much and
Thank you.
you have such a beautiful light and passion and a gift for helping people. So I'm grateful for your honesty and your openness and your courage for getting to
Thank you.
this space where you are today and for sharing so vulnerably with us. And I want to double click on the part about being a parent and your son, who is, you said almost 21, I think you said almost 21. So, how have you built that relationship? And was there ever a time that you felt like a less than perfect parent and you had to really, talk about that? Because many of us are. You know, with my youngest, I'm in the process of rescuing that relationship, I will say that way, and creating a space for a really positive relationship. It's very different than just not having one in the past. But would love to hear your story about your child and your relationship with your son.
So my son is, y'all, that's my baby.
I see your
And I don't care.
smile. You lit up the whole screen.
I don't care how old he gets, he will always be my baby. So for me, with raising my son, I'll tell you first how I was a less than perfect parent to him. Y'all, and this book really had made me take accountability, okay? I thought that I was the perfect mom. Every bit of what I did not receive from my mother, I made sure that my son got. I made sure that he got it. He had an open space to speak freely about how he was feeling, to help him to process his emotions instead of stuffing them down, as you know, so many parents, especially 80s parents, right? You are seen and not heard, and you don't get to have emotions because you don't
That's
pay
right.
bills. I did not want to do that to my son. I also put him in sports and things like that so that he could, you know, develop his social skills. It was never really about the sports. I really didn't care about sports. I just wanted him to be able to develop social skills, especially when I came to grips that he was going to be an only child, right? But whenever I had interactions with my son, I would always go back to my inner child. And before I responded to him, and I had to train myself to do this, before I responded to him, I would have to say, how would little Kelly feel if I responded this way? Because there would be many a time that I would want to go off, right? But how would little Kelly feel? And in understanding and remembering the abuse that I suffered from my mother, it forced me, if I wanted to maintain a healthy relationship with him, to pause before you react, before you respond. And so I would always talk to my son and ask him why he would do certain things. Why? So the way that I parented him was I learned what not to do from my mother and I learned what to do from my father. And I joined that together and kind of mom that I was. I showed up as a less than perfect parent for him because I was then and am recovering from perfectionism. So that thing that my mother, again, hair laid, face beat, on point, well fitted, right? So my son was having tailored suits when he was like 7, 8 years old. We was going to see Miss Lee in Georgetown, right? Oh, you get it's got to be a certain way, and you when you leave the house, you got to look this way, and you got to get a haircut, and you got to get this, and da 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 da. And then I was also an overachiever. I was trying to win the love of my mother, so I placed that standard on my son, right? We're not coming in here with anything less than a B, and if you got a B, we need to figure out how to make it an A. All of the things, right? And when you go to school, and there ain't no fighting, and da 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 da, right? You're a leader. You're a leader. You hold the door for the girls in the class. Rush to the front of the line. Like I was that parent, and then of course my military background, right? We on a schedule.
Very disciplined and on schedule.
Yes, right. My son had a bedtime every night. We not going past go. This is, and by the time bedtime comes, everything that you needed to have done for that day needed to be done before you get in that bed, right? And if it was not, then we're gonna have a conversation tomorrow about what we can do to be better the next day, right? So that was the pressure that I put on my son. And I asked my son a question not long ago, probably like a year and a half ago. I said to him, what could I have done better in parenting you? I said, I'm sorry that I'm asking you this question after you're an adult, right? But what could I have done to parent you better? He's like, Mom, you gave me an amazing childhood. I don't want you to feel like you were, a bad parent. You were amazing. And I love how you mothered me. He said, the only thing is you put your standard of excellence on me. And oftentimes I struggled with being able to keep up with that standard.
Oh.
And that broke my heart because it was something that I felt as a child.
Yes.
And I was trying, as much as I was trying to not be like my mother, it came out, right? It was in me. That was the one thing that I forgot to transmute or to transform. But he said it served him well. Right, my son is now an honor roll student at Louisiana State University in his junior year. He's doing well, right? When he got his first job, I never had to wake him up. I never had to ensure that he got to work on time because he was super responsible with that. He made sure he found his own way to work. And if he, I was his last resort to take him to work, right? So he made sure that he did what he was supposed to do there. Even in getting into school, he did it on his own. I felt robbed. I was like, "Dad, you didn't let me help you." He's like, "Mom, no. Like, you've raised me well enough to be able to do this on my own." And so I had to apologize to my son for not allowing him to come into the development of his own standard in his childhood, right? Y'all, by the time my son was 8, he was doing his own, he was cooking his own breakfast, he was waking himself up for school, he all of that. I'm in the bed. And he's
By the time
managing
you were
all of this,
eight, you
right?
said
By
eight
the time he
years
was
old?
8, absolutely. And so he was like, Mom, I just had so much responsibility. Yeah, I had a great childhood, but there was a lot of responsibility that was placed on me. And there was a standard that you set that oftentimes I struggle with meeting. So, but it served him well. So after that conversation, I had to make sure that I am mindful of that. So now as he is in college, right? I'm not OCD about checking his grades. I'm not, son, do you got it? Do you need anything from me? Okay. Remember when you make decisions that this is what comes along with that decision. So you got to be okay with all of it, but it's not me, as I call a smother mother, where I'm, making, you got to do this, you got to do that. Like I had to take my, learn to take my hands off from that. I had to trust the fact that I had raised him well enough, right? That he could make his decisions. And because I'm a believer, the same Holy Ghost that carried me through my teenage years, which were tumultuous, can absolutely handle and take care of my son. And so that's kind of how I got to where I am. But I will say this, one of the things that I learned this in my divorce, is our children are capable of more than what we give them credit for. And we have to create space for them to show us and to tell us. So when I was going through my divorce, one of the things I have prided myself on in parenting my son is always talking to him beforehand, right? Always preparing him for what is to come. So we always had conversations about your dad and I are separating. We both still love you, but I need you to understand that the life that you have known all of your life is going to be a little different. So what I did was, instead of forcing him to talk to me, I learned to be quiet. Y'all, I'm a talker if you can't tell. Okay. I had to I had to learn to be quiet. And instead of forcing him to, how are you feeling? How, what are we doing? Just be quiet. And as soon as I learned how to be quiet, he came around
That's
and he
right.
started talking to me, right? And it wasn't me feeding him his lines and asking him leading questions. It was him finally feeling safe enough and free enough to come to talk to me about what it is that he was feeling, what it is that he was experiencing, and to ask me for advice. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, when we were moving, I selected three different locations for us to live. And I took him to all three locations. We talked about what he liked and what he didn't like about each location. And I let him pick where our new home would be. And so that was a lesson in leadership for him, right? It was a lesson in ownership for him. He felt like he was doing something good for mom. He felt like he was protecting mom. And so he took ownership of man of the house without me requiring him to do that. So I didn't put the pressure on him. You now you're 12 years old, so you're the man of the house. No. Where would you like to live? Right? And so giving him a part of the decision, such a major decision, really boosted his confidence. It really took our relationship to an entirely new level. Like there was a level of trust there. I started putting other decisions in his path and seeing if he wanted to make those decisions. And then I would really affirm him in making the decision that he made. And it yielded benefits, y'all, that I am still seeing today. It's almost 10 years
That's
later.
amazing. I mean, choosing where you live, I think I still have a little bit of that old school. It's like you ain't paying for it, so this is where we gonna live. But that's, I think that's an incredible example of asking for input and genuinely caring about their opinion. That is powerful. And the first thing you talked about, being quiet and listening, opens up a space for them to really start talking. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I cut you off, but that just made me go, oh gosh, we just moved. I didn't provide a choice at all. So this is your room. This is where we call me. He did pick his comforter, the little one, but so that's enough of a choice to me. But anyway, I'm sorry. I love that. And I cut you off. You were about to say something else, I think, as well, with your child, about your child, how you've trained him and how you've given him space to grow. But you planted those seeds, Kelly. That's what you did. You planted seeds. So now that he's off at LSU, he's making such great choices because you planted the seeds and fertilized the soil so beautifully for all those years. So he's blooming.
Yes, thank you. And that's the thing, right? Like when you are, as a parent, you're not going to be perfect.
That's right.
And the way that you are expressing love is not always the way that they interpret love. And we get this mixed up, and this happens in romantic relationships as well as parent-child relationships and friend relationships, platonic relationships. We think that what we're giving, because our intention is to love, right? So I'm giving you this, I'm doing this for you. And that's not how that person interprets love. And so you're doing it for naught, right? And so I had to learn how my son interpreted love and then tailor my actions towards him to mimic that, to mirror that. So my son does not like a whole lot of forced conversation. He's very quiet. He is very laid back. He's very demure. Okay. My son does not talk unless he has something to say. And so instead of, bombarding him with a whole bunch of questions, because I'm a question asker, right? But if I'm asking you questions, it's because I'm genuinely interested. I want to know, want to know, right? But my son is like, girl, back up. So I had to learn what I wanted to do to show him love, interest, right? You want to know what your day is like? Tell me. I had to be quiet and wait for him to come around to me. And so I encourage parents to figure out the ways, and you're for how they receive or interpret love. They may not have language, but their actions will absolutely show you. The other thing is, I never forced my son to wear certain things. So when he was younger and it was in the suits, because his dad is a preacher, and when we go to church, and he liked it at one point. He wanted to be like his dad. And his dad, listen, the dad knows how to dress, right? He'll put a three-piece suit together. So he wanted to be like his dad. But at some point, there was a transition. And, he wanted to wear his hoodie to church. And while dad and mom, I'm dressed to the nines, the dad is dressed to the nines, he's in the hoodie. And y'all, I was like, oh, Jesus, okay.
Right.
This don't
God
look
loves
right.
him anyway, hoodie or not.
Right?
With
But
your
this,
suit.
it challenged my inner child, because my inner child was always dressed to the nines. So my son defying that challenged some parts of me. But instead of forcing on him what I felt was right, I had to ask myself, how would little Kelly feel if, how did little Kelly feel, right? Because I didn't own my first pair of Jordans. I didn't own them until I was an adult. I wasn't allowed to wear boy sneakers as a child. And I hated that because I wanted to. I grew up with brothers to dress like them. I would steal my brother's shirts, and I would get in trouble by my mother for leaving out the house looking like a boy, right? So in that moment of cringe, where is this coming from? Why do you feel, who is going to die because he is wearing a hoodie
That's
to
right.
church? Who, right? And so I had to really get with myself and say, no, give him the space. So I had to create boundaries for him. You can wear what you want to wear, but the message, if you're wearing a graphic tee, is no skulls. There is no foolishness in the language that is going to be written out on whatever you're wearing. So there were definitely parameters or boundaries, but within the boundaries, have your way, sir. Do what you want. And for a minute to this day, at 21, you will find him in a hoodie and some joggers.
Most
And I'm
young
like,
men, it's comfort, comfort. Yeah.
absolutely. So, and I let him be
Let him
without
be.
judgment, without placing my standards on him, right? From that conversation, I learned I don't need to have another conversation with him about what it is that he is going to put on his body. And
Let
even
them
when he,
be.
hey, because this summer he had an internship at the architect of the Capitol, and I'm thinking to myself, is he getting ready to go on these people's job with this hoodie on, right? And so I would, oh, do they have a uniform? Ma, okay. Well, you want to go shopping for some new clothes? Ma, okay. Him and his dad went shopping, right? And he had some polo shirts and some khakis and things like that. But he did it on his own, right? I was like, well, do you want me to buy you? Ma, I have money. No, I'm fine. Okay, y'all, my little feelings was hurt, but I had to let him be, right?
Let
And
him be.
he's coming into his own, and I don't get to dictate what that looks like for him. And
Right.
as much as I want to, because I have all of these high hopes for him, I also have to let him
Let
be.
Because you planted the seeds. You planted the seeds early. So he is thriving and growing and blossoming. And I think even for some of our children that may have a different journey or may, have chosen a different path, the seeds are there. And, the seeds are there. And so I think being a less than perfect parent, I love all of what you talked about, especially the being able to recreate a relationship. It's not too late. For those of us that may have definitely been less than perfect parents and didn't work on the relationship like you did so beautifully with your son, I think it's an opportunity to, like you said, what would little Kelly say? I have the same name, but what would my little person say if I responded that way? That's a wonderful way to put yourself in your observer's chair and pause before responding. I
Absolutely.
think that's so great. Very
And can I just
insightful.
say really quickly, if you are that less than perfect parent, you're going to have to eat some humble pie. Okay. You're going to have to take off the superiority hat and take a moment to, because apologizing is not enough just saying, I'm sorry for what I did, right? You have to acknowledge the fact that you were a less than perfect parent. And you have to separate your intention and understand intention versus impact. Your intention was one thing, but the way it landed or impacted your child was another. And the impact doesn't negate the intention, but we still have to address and acknowledge the impact. The other thing you need to do is to be open with sharing your history. The thing that helped me to forgive my mother was when I learned that she too had been abused as a child, right? Sexually abused as a child. She too had a father, or she had a father or parent that was abusive, right? So I can now understand and show empathy towards my mother. So when you share your history with your children, it opens their eyes to understanding you just a little bit better. So maybe the things that you did do weren't really so bad. It was an offshoot of what you had already experienced. And a lot of times, as parents, we parent from our mistakes. I want to make sure my child doesn't make the mistakes that I did. And so, because I had the experience, I'm going to keep them. And so, you end up putting pressure on them, trying to protect them from something that may not even exist. You're two totally different generations. My son grew up with internet. I didn't have internet until I was an adult, right? Two completely different generations. So what I experienced and what I lived, right? Even the going outside, right? I had a bike crew as a kid. My son, I don't even know if he know how to ride a bike, okay? We tried that a couple of times. He didn't want it. He was in the house playing his video games, right? So two completely different generations. And when you can understand that what you experienced was not just your parents, but it was also the time that you grew up in, you have to tailor your parenting to where they are today. And only when you see them going in the direction can you begin to admonish them back into alignment. But even then, your children have a mind of their own.
That's
They have
it.
a way of processing emotions. They have a way of processing information that is not like yours.
That's right.
And you have to give them the space to exercise that and to feel into that. When my son was becoming a teenager and his little lion's roar was coming up, the mother in me wanted to shut him down. Okay. Sir, wait a minute. But I had to create opportunities for his roar to be validated in our home. Again, boundaries. Don't be disrespectful now, sir. Wait a minute. So I'm still your mom. Okay. Right. But boundaries, right? This is what disrespect looks like to me. Right. But I also understand that this is where you are. So creating ways to nurture the roar so that he, because when they become adults, right, and adults who have never had an opportunity to nurture their roar in childhood, their roar is really loud. And it can be scary when they become an adult if they've never had an opportunity to really
That's
lean
it.
into it. And so creating that space to nurture it, right? And then giving them, here is your circle. Whatever you want to do in this circle, you can do all of that. You want to listen to your music. You want to go in your room. You want to cut your pillows. I don't care. What this is what you can do in that circle, right? But a lot of times parents will create this size of a circle, even though their kids are this big.
That's it right there. And then they start coming outside, going,
Oh.
using those, we're going outside the circle, which causes this tension. So, what do you say to parents who have created a tiny circle, not big enough circle, that their children, maybe children or might be young adults, have gone outside the circle, have challenged those boundaries, and they are at their wits' end? What do you say to those parents at that point, especially if it's a 20-year-old, a 22-year-old who's not respecting those boundaries?
I'm gonna say a word, and it's gonna sound like a cuss word when you hear it, but I promise you it works. It's one word: surrender.
Yeah.
Surrender. Why are those boundaries there? Right? Let's get into, you created this circle, right? Why is the circle this size? What's contributing to the size of the circle? Is the circle this small because you had a pretty wide circle and you realize how buck wild you might have been in your, so let me I gotta put the lock down on that. Or maybe they've exhibited some behaviors that you don't necessarily agree with, so I gotta
Or
tighten the
there's
circle. It's
fear.
reactive, right? Surrender and talk to your children. Ask them, okay, you did this, right? These are this is the boundary, and you went outside the boundary. Try to ask why. Have a conversation, but instead of reacting and getting angry, and you went outside the boundary. No, there's something driving that in your child. There's something in it. They are bucking against the system for a reason, and it's something that the system is doing to the core of who they are.
Yes,
Right? It's deeper
absolutely.
than just they decided to just be. No, there's something driving that. And most parents just get angry. They react and they lash out, and then they make the circle even smaller. So now we're down to this size of a circle, right?
That was
Well, what you're doing is you're suffocating
that's
your child, and you are really squeezing the life out of their authenticity. Children in my son's age group and beyond are all about being authentic. And authenticity does not, today does not look like authenticity yesterday. Does not. And you have to give them the space to figure out who they authentically are. And sometimes they're going to want to try stuff that you have never tried and don't, it doesn't make sense to you. But as long as you are there, right, to catch them when they fall. Children who know that they have a parent that they can fall back on are the children that will always come back, right? But you have to give
Absolutely.
them the space to be, and they're trying to figure it out. They're trying to figure it out. Do you trust the seeds, as you have said so wonderfully, Kelly? Do you trust the seeds that you have put into them? But a lot of times you'll plant a seed and then you overwater it.
Correct.
Right? And what happens when you overwater a seed? You drown it out. And so if your child is this big, but you are creating a circle that's this big, you're suffocating them. Look at ways that you can expand the boundaries to give them the space to be able to be and become. It's the difference between being in a body of water in a bathtub or being in a body of water in the ocean,
That's right.
right?
That's
Which
right.
one are you gonna, both of them will get you clean.
That's right.
But at the end of the day, one has a little more restriction than others. And maybe you don't want to give them the
Yeah.
ocean, so give them a pool.
That's right. I love that. Or a small C. There's a someone has their hand up, so I want to make sure we have time. Please. Good morning.
Thank you so much for your comments. And I was listening to it and it was very healing. I do, and when we're thinking about parenting, I wanted to say that a lot of that works when a child does not have mental wellness.
issues. But there are times when, if your child is suffering with mental wellness, that their ability to distinguish what's okay and what's not okay becomes a lot more difficult. And I say that because I have three sons. And so I can see a lot of the things that you're talking about with my two sons that don't have mental wellness is very applicable. But there are times when you realize, like, when they're trying to be their authentic selves with mental wellness issues becomes a unique challenge because a lot of their sense of what is reality and their sense of boundaries is a little bit off because of the conditions that they suffer. So it just brings a very different, it's a brings a unique challenge. And I say that as someone who's been doing a lot of my own personal work and just understanding that you have to make changes in yourself and your parenting and acknowledging all of those. But there are times with my child that has mental wellness. It's the boundaries or what reality is and is just not right. It's just a challenge. It's kind of like, wow, I see you deeply understand what you're saying. However, this is not necessarily true. And so it's a challenge when they're trying to do that without taking in consideration what we know to be real. And because of, like you said, social media, all of these things that are going on that impact them, their views of what is real because of misinformation and what they can and cannot do is so out of there that it poses just a unique challenge. And I just wanted to say, now, with everything that you're saying with my two children that don't have mental wellness issues, I'm like, I am feeling you. It tracks and I feel very empowered by it. But I just wanted to be like, that would work for two out of three, you know, and what we're trying to work through. I just wanted to put that into the space. But thank you so very much, Kelly.
Oh, of course. So let me just say to you, I appreciate your comment. And the only piece of advice that I could give you, and this works when I deal with like my friends' children who have mental illness, they love me because I come into their world. I don't care how loopy, crazy, whatever it is, I'm a citizen in your country when you come around. So if whatever you are doing in that moment, right? And even if it doesn't seem right to me, and my friends will say, Kelly, I've not been able to get him to eat this or do this, clean his room. And here you come around and he just does it. It's because I get into his world, right? I become like him. And as silly or as foolish as that may seem to the normal thinking person, to them, they feel seen, they feel validated, and they are more apt to gravitating towards you when they know that in their gravitation towards you, that they are accepted. So if you're always telling him what's wrong or her what's wrong or don't do this or you can't do that, and no, that's not real. That's not, their thought process is not like ours. And to them, it is real. And as long as it's not anything that's detrimental to their health or their well-being, let it be real. Be okay with if they think that they are, you know, an astronaut and he walk around with a helmet on his head all day. Okay. When my son was coming up, he loved cowboy boots, right? Between ages 2 and 4, but all year round though. It's 99 degrees outside. Why do you want these cowboy boots?
I love
Right?
it.
And it didn't matter what he was wearing. He could have on shorts. He was going to have his cowboy boots on. In his mind, those are the best shoes in the world. Right? I tell him
Yes.
that they're not. Okay. Well, listen, if you want to be out here looking crazy in your cowboy boots in 99 degree weather, come on, boo. Because what you're not going to do is stop me from, I got to go to the store, I got to go do this, I got to go, and you got to come with me. So get the cowboy boots and let's go. That's not a fight or an argument that I wanted to have. And I went right into his world. And then I got myself a pair of cowboy boots. I had some gold ones.
Love it.
So did. Now, and my feet was hot as heck, right? But it didn't matter because I validated and affirmed his expression of himself. And then I participated. I went into his world. And not long after that, he didn't want the cowboy boots anymore. Like, I done went and spent $250 on these daggone cowboy boots, and I only wore them 3 times. But it was to validate. I came into his world. And so if I could say anything to you, it is figure out a way to come into your child's world. And as long as their delusion is not detrimental, just join him. When my grandmother was passing away, she had dementia. And she thought that the birds that were outside her window were people that were peeping in at her, right? Now, my grandmother at the time was 106. And she's very, listen, we cover up, we don't let people see. It's a, you know, and so in the morning, she would call one of us in there, come close this window, these people out there looking at me. Instead of telling her, Grandma, that's the birds. No, it's like, okay, oh God, let me close this window, this curtain. Y'all need to get away from this window. She's like, yeah, tell them they need to get away from the window. It's birds, right? But I came into her world. So that was one less fight or contention that I had to endure with her. And I had the power to determine how that interaction was going to be.
Oh, yes.
I could have corrected her. You could correct your child. Or I could have just played along. Because there was no detriment to getting into her world. So.
Love that. Oh, what a beautiful story, and what a wonderful way to close this morning, because coming into their world, validating and affirming whoever it is, and being in that space, opens up a possibility for a beautiful relationship with whomever it is. Like you said, your child, your parent, your loved one, your friends, everyone, that we're in relationship with, ourselves, not even being critical and harsh on ourselves.
Right.
That's so powerful.
Absolutely.
Do you want to say any last words before we wrap up? I wanted to say thank you so much for being here, and Dr. Vicky's going to close us out in a moment, but any last parting words or tips as we wrap this morning?
Yes. First and foremost, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here and to have been able to share. I hope that something that I have said may have pricked a thought, shifted a perspective, or really changed the path or the trajectory of the journey that you are on. And this
Yes.
to every parent in the room, you are doing the best that you can. And so I want you to give yourself credit for that, right? Your children are
Yes,
still
talk
alive.
about it again.
So you've done that, right? That is amazing. But now it's time to really dig in and dig deep. And really explore from your child's perspective. And when
Yes.
you tap into your inner child, and just take a moment to pause, right? And sit in the observer's chair and say, how would my child self react or respond or feel if I reacted this way, if my parent reacted this way? And hopefully you can train yourself, right, to not be completely driven by your emotions. To just pause and see things from your child's perspective. Don't forget to lean in to them. Give them the space to tell you and to show you what they are capable of because your children are capable of so much more. And lastly, as a parent, be open and be willing to have a tough conversation with your children about how your parenting is now and what they need from you in order for you to become an even better parent. Listen, I am Kelly Ware. You can find me on social media at all things at I am Kelly Ware. My website, iamkellyware.com. Please ensure to hit me up. I am available for any additional questions that you may have outside of this. I would love to talk to you. And it's been a pleasure being here. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I am Kelly. It's Kelly with an I. I am Kelly Ware. .com, is Kelly's website, and you are amazing. Thank you so much for being here today. What a blessing. And now, Dr. Vicki Johnson will close us out this morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Kelly. Kelly Ware, Kelly Squared, Kelly Ware, and Kelly Lawson. Kelly Joy, both with a Chris. That was so significant to me at the
That's
beginning. Thank
deep.
you for sharing, Kelly, and being so transparent. And you gave us a lot to think about. Just thank you. God, we thank you for this beautiful day that you have given to us. We choose to rejoice. We choose to give you glory. Thank you for your word that says we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and by the words of our testimony. Thank you for the testimony that you have given to Kelly Ware and to Kelly Joy, and how their pain has now become their passion and purpose to help others thrive as parents, as healed children. God, we thank you for the ability and capacity to be a light in a dark world, to be encouragement where there is discouragement, to be hope where there is despair. We thank you for the Sunrise Project. We thank you for the work of Kelly Ware's hands, that her book will give others permission to heal, to thrive, to face things that may have been suppressed. Thank you for every parent that comes to make up this community every Sunday. Bless their households, bless their children. Give us all wisdom as we move forward, as healed versions of ourselves. God, we will continue to give you all of the glory and all of the praise and all that we do. Bless the Sunrise Project team. Thank you for encouragement. Thank you for strength. Thank you for a refreshing of the hands of Kelly and Dee as they do this work to impact the world for the good of the people and for your glory. We give you praise and all of these things. In Jesus' name, we do pray and give thanks. Amen. Thank you again, Kelly Ware. You were fantastic. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone. Have a beautiful, incredible day. Thank you, Dr. Vicki. And thank you, namesake Kelly. Have an amazing day.